Ray, welcome on.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I'm in your town doing the LA away game.
It's always fun.
Hot off the JetBlue mint situation. And you've got an interesting story, man, because I thought I was living it up, living large. You kind of know some cool people out there. You've built and organized some amazing things that I want to learn about. Tell me what's going on. Tell me what's going on at your company.
Sure.
And it didn't start here. It started earlier. But anyway, tell me about what's going on.
You know, we're all overnight successes, 20, 30, or some of us 50 years in the making.
Exactly.
I've really led two careers. Just go through my personal story before we come to the company story.
Yeah, sure.
About half of that career has been in early stage technology. I've been a repeat founder, been an investor. I was co-founder and CEO of Particle, which was acquired by Apple in 2010. A bunch of other kind of startup work. The other half of my career.
Okay, so you had an exit to Apple. That doesn't suck.
Believe me, it didn't make any significant. Okay. More of an aqua hire than
okay.
It sounds, but listen, we don't want to overstate. But you know,
sure. Not everyone does it.
Hard to do. The other half of my career has been in the ultra high net worth space.
Okay.
So I've worked with multifamily offices, a number of significant recording artists and other media personalities. In that role, I developed this thesis. The most famous people in the world are leading generally more fun and interesting lives than people who are just wealthy. And I think it had a lot to do with how the teams were organized around them.
Okay.
Most family offices, so if you cross kind of the $100 million net worth threshold, the investment and the management of your money becomes so cumbersome that you need a team of people to do it. You can't just have like a broker, right, sitting at
you need know, to build your own hedge fund, basically.
And so you build what's called a family office. And so most of those family offices are investment organizations. Well, once you've made all of that money, you also want to enjoy it. You also mm-hmm. want to lead your life. Mm-hmm. And so I had this idea that the single family office crowds needed a concierge that was actually built to work for them.
Okay.
One of the dirty little secrets is that things like the Amex Black Card, you see people clanging them around.
Yep.
They don't actually really do anything for the person that holds one, right? And most people who have them are like, I don't even know why I have this thing. It's right. Besides, it just makes a cool noise, you know, when I'm picking up the check. So we built this concierge for single family offices that was called The Blue. Ran it for 5 years.
Okay.
And scaled that business on a bootstrap basis from zero to $60 million in GMV. It's
wow.
Top line of revenue. Yeah. Now, we were selling hours.
Okay.
You sell $60 million. You know, hours. There's a lot of freaking hours. Yeah. You are, you know, my dad would say, you know, I was busy as a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, right? And at the end of 5 years of that, I was like, wow, I really want to get back to the scalable side of this and build essentially a scalable business model for that.
Okay.
So 18 months ago, we organized Myria. We went through Y Combinator, the Winter 22 class in kind of January through April of last year. And we raised our seed round. Myria is a community and concierge for the ultra wealthy.
Okay.
We have been highly selective, like actually every concierge is like, oh, we're selective about our members. No,
right. And every nightclub in Miami is selective.
Right. We're selective, AKA, if you're willing to pay $1,000 for a $30 bottle of alcohol, come on in, right? That's normally what they mean by selective. But for us, we mean selective, like Fortune 100 CEOs, founders and CEOs of household name companies, some of the biggest stars in the world, like really, really significant folks. Because for us, we're trying to build a brand. And then on the concierge side, doing things that don't actually suck and are differentiated, right? And that's kind of where we are.
Wow. So you got to know your customer very well through this previous iteration, mm-hmm. where you are effectively a consultancy of just everything. You're consulting on every aspect, I'm guessing. Travel, entertainment.
Non-financial. Right. Anything non-financial.
Okay.
So all the lifestyle stuff. you know, just to kind of set this world up, because a lot of people don't understand it. We'll do a quick share of wallet discussion around ultra high net worth. So that phrase, it's a mouthful, ultra high net worth, but it means a person with a net worth of at least $30 million. Per last count, there's around 390,000 of them worldwide.
That's your addressable market?
That just shy of 400,000 people is worth a combined $30 trillion.
Wow.
And when you look at how they allocate that, 21 trillion of the 30 goes to investments. Mm-hmm. And then you've got things like personal real estate and travel and philanthropy and education and art and collectibles, and all the stuff that the ultra wealthy spend that money on. Mm-hmm. When you just look at the lifestyle pieces of it, they spend $410 billion per year on lifestyle and recreation alone. That's 1.1 million a head. And so that's our market. We focus exclusively on the needs of the ultra wealthy and specifically the lifestyle and recreational needs.
How does a high net worth individual hang out different than a non-high net worth individual?
Well, the truth is it's a spectrum. And one of the secrets of our business is that, you know, you think about over here, let's say the left of the spectrum, this is the easy stuff. This is the simple stuff, which is simply for sale. And you get all the way over here to the right, things which are quote unquote impossible. We paint this 5-step spectrum. So I'm going to answer your question on how their lives are different, right? So over here to the left, it's easy. If your credit card will swipe, it's yours. Think Coachella VIP pass.
Done.
Right?
Anyone can go on the website.
You got $1,000.
Yeah.
You've got a VIP pass. And okay, they sell 10,000 of them. Move step to the right. You want to go to, I don't know, Zinyara, the after party. Sure, you might be able to buy it online, but it's a little difficult. You might want to use a promoter. You might want to use, you know, some person who's kind of in the nightlife world, kind of like booking a private jet. You can book a private jet online, but it's kind of intentionally opaque and complexified, right? Mm-hmm. And so people use brokers and they use all sorts of folks because in that second category, sure, it's available online, but it's hard. So that would be like the Zinyara after party or Neon Carnival or whatever. Move to the middle.
We're still going.
Right? You get to off market. These are things that they're not available on any website. This would be, say, an artist pass to Coachella, right? You want to be backstage. Whoa, there's 10,000 people in the VIP. This doesn't feel very VIP. I want to go backstage. So you buy an artist pass. Now, again, they're selling artist passes, but they're not selling them online, right? And so you'd have to work with a concierge or someone kind of in this third tier sort of stuff. Now, Beyonce is your favorite artist. You want to go on stage during her performance. You take your artist pass to the security and they're like, no, this is not getting you on Beyonce's stage. Beyonce controls who stands on her stage during her set, as does every other headliner.
Sure.
So if you want to be on that stage, you need another credential in order to do that. That's in the fourth category, hard. And in that last category, well, sticking with four, these would be things like, you know, walking the red carpet at the Met Gala. Right, these things are incredibly hard to do. It's not about money, it's about who you are and all sorts of other things. And then the last category is the impossible. So when Beyonce gets off that stage, if she's on a tour bus, who's on that tour bus with her is up to her, right? And it doesn't matter what relationship you have, doesn't matter how much money you have, like if she doesn't know you, doesn't think you cool, then you're not there.
Right.
And you know, that includes things, the category five is things like, you know, $100 million private residences for rent. Anybody owning a $100 million home is not listing that house on Airbnb to strangers.
On Zillow.
Right? And so if they want to rent it to someone, they need to know you.
Just to word it up. Situation.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so my business, we don't do any one of the one category. Anybody with a web browser can do that. That's for their assistant. Our work starts at the complex, number two, and runs all the way through number five. The best concierges you've ever heard of, really and truly, are two and three. And a lot of those folks, frankly, call us when they need the fours and fives.
Sorry, if my mouth is just open, this is awesome.
So with that setup,
this is great. Yeah, this is fantastic. Well, because what you're describing is, I can't help but just, I draw the parallels. Like this, there's the high life that you see that's for sale. Mm-hmm. And it's flashy and it's Instagram and it's selfies. And then there's all this stuff that's invisible. And that's where things get really interesting.
Really interesting. You know, we say internally that, and this is going to sound really crazy for a person in my business, that luxury is a concept for poor people to aspire to.
To be sold. Right,
like, oh, I want to be luxury, 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 luxury. Past a certain point of wealth, the clients are actually post-luxury. Right?
Explain to me post-luxury.
So if I just made enough money to buy a Ferrari, I might go buy a Ferrari.
Right.
But if I'm worth enough money to buy Ferrari, like the entire corporation, I don't really care whether or not I drive a Ferrari because I'm worth $100 billion. It's irrelevant whether or not I'm driving a Ferrari, right? Right. And so these people are literally post-luxury. And some clients are in either category. There's even a third category that we use internally, which we call post-post-luxury. These are people who are... It's a whole other special class of human.
Post-luxury.
Yes.
This is where the status element of things falls to the wayside,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. It's completely gone. It's not about stuff at all.
Right.
Sure, they like nice things like any other person, but it's not financially consequential. And so it's literally irrelevant. It's even annoying or cloying to even hear about it, for it to even be pushed too hard. And that post-post-luxury.
And this is where, this is only becoming... in the pop culture lexicon through shows like Succession, where they sort of show these quirks of like, I don't wear a jacket. Why would I wear a jacket? I'm never outside. You know, these weird quirks. And they're, you know, in the show, they make sure that they're wearing, you know, non-label facing designer kind of stuff that's right, more understated. Right, right. And so people, of course, take that on face value and say, oh, well, rich people wear boring stuff. It's like, well, no, I mean, maybe, I guess. But it's what's interesting is it's really gets quite deep and philosophical, because if you can be sold something and you can buy anything, then there's no high that you could get from anything that
exactly.
you could buy.
Exactly.
Then your life starts to almost go back to the basics of, well, wouldn't it just be cool to have a private experience or something one of a kind, or
share things with family
for the first time.
Give back. You'd be surprised at how, first of all, look, it's always a spectrum. You know, there for every rich guy over here doing this, I can show you one doing the opposite. But you'd be surprised in that kind of post-luxury, you know, crazy rich category, just how important doing the right thing is for a lot of those people. Certainly not all. Absolutely. But trying to act in a socially responsible and a philanthropic way. You know, people don't like to talk about it, especially in my world, but there are three people in America, Elon, Bezos, and Bill Gates, combined have more money than the poorest 165 million Americans, the poorest half of the country. Three people have more money than 165 million. For most folks, whether you call yourself a socialist, a communist, capitalist, whatever you want to call it, like that's not directionally awesome for society, right? And it can end badly. And so a lot of folks, even the ultra wealthy, are trying to do as much as they can to act in a socially responsible way for reasons like that.
Sure.
And again, I'm not criticizing any of those three individuals. I'm just saying that, you know, we're all participating in this economic system. These are the outcomes.
I understand what you're saying. Because politics aside, you just say, is there something that I could do to help? Simple
Absolutely.
Question, right?
Absolutely.
And then, of course, depending on who you are, you have your strengths and weaknesses about how you can deploy that help.
Yep.
Whether it's technology, resources, just capital.
And it's hard.
It is hard.
Right? Where like... how do you give back? How do you make an impact? Mm-hmm. How do you touch and affect? I mean, you know, government tries to do it, does a poor job of it. It's inefficient. Philanthropists try to do it. Running foundations, it's
another business,
literally hard.
Business of giving money Absolutely. Away effectively.
Absolutely.
And showing net good as your return.
Yep.
Right? It's hard enough to track, you know, the impact of a for-profit business, let alone a business that what they're getting back might
Absolutely.
Not be so tangible.
Absolutely.
Oh man, I feel like I'm getting a masterclass on something that I hit on just the surface in my skits, my rich versus really rich skits, because the rich versus really rich skits were designed, number one, for me to have some fun, and make some faces in my phone. And
listen, that could be goofy. I'm not trying to go too deep on it, but yeah, no, I love it.
Well, I can't help it. I'm getting deep on it. All right. It's my fault. Blame me.
All right.
But what's interesting is you only always see a little bit of the conversation and the story. Like, so what I'm realizing now is, you know, it's not this, well, rich people will drive beat up Volvos and wear khakis, so I'm going to wear khakis now.
Right.
It's like, no. There is a shift that happens. So, but what's brilliant and I think really empowering to everybody is like, imagine making all of that money to realize all the shit that you worked for is meaningless to you. That's heavy.
This is fundamental to our business. So when a client comes on, we perform essentially a personal strategic plan, which we call a blueprint. And it's a process. We give them a questionnaire. The first four questions are about their happiness. Are you happy? Right? And then there's a bunch of other stuff around, you know, who's important to them and what's important to life. And there's questions like, you know, imagine it's your 80th birthday and everyone that you love is gathered around. And they toast you. What would you want to hear them say? Mm. You know, we listen to that answer. And then there's a series of questions like, if we held that same party today, what would they say? And what's the difference between, sure. you know, what they would say right now and what you want said at the 80th birthday? And then how do you spend your time to do it? So what ends up happening is we're born into capitalism. Oh, let's go make money. Got to make money. You've had your wealth event. Look, Ma, I've made it.
Mm-hmm.
And then am I happy? I got all the stuff money could buy. I've got all. Who, do I have friends to enjoy it with? You know, a lot of people become super successful because they essentially over-index on success, right? So if you focused all of your time on business success or financial success, oftentimes kids get neglected, right. Your partner gets neglected, your health gets neglected, all of these things. And so you've got these successful people who've turned up super successful and they're like, what's next? And when people ask that what's next question, they call us.
That's so interesting. Well, it's also, there's also this lie that society says that it's like the second you get rich, your life turns into a rap video. And it doesn't unless you have maybe a little bit of help. But also if you've invested in the relationships, if you've invested in the lifestyle, it's not enough to just get handed, you know, $500 million. It's like, nothing actually, the axis of the universe does not shift the minute that gets, you know, ledgered over to your bank account. In fact, the only thing that might change is now people that you've never engaged with are interested in spending time with you. And those are likely the last people on earth you want to spend time with. So you're confronted with this scenario where you say, back to basics in a sense.
Many, many people do. There was this old movie. You probably have not seen it. It wasn't a particularly good movie, but I remember watching it as a kid. It was a Richard Pryor film, and it was called Brewster's Millions.
Okay.
And the premise was Richard Pryor was a struggling AAA baseball pitcher.
Okay.
But he was the only heir to a rich uncle. And the rich uncle dies, leaves him $300 million. And the movie opens with this crotchety old man you know, giving the video a talk to Richard Pryor, to his heir. He's like, you've never done shit with your, can we cuss? I don't know if we can.
Yeah, we can.
All right. Yeah. You've never done shit with your life. I'm not going to hand your dumbass $300 million. So here's what I'm going to do. I'll give you $5 million. You can have, and you can fuck around with it. It's yours. Do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want the $300 million inheritance, you're going to have to learn to hate money first.
Hmm.
I'm going to give you $30 million to spend in 30 days on the condition that you have nothing left to show for it. Not one penny. You're going to go waste $30 million.
Okay.
And if you have one asset, if you have anything left to show for it, you get nothing.
You fail the test.
Right. You fail the test. And so the premise of this movie is, you know, he goes out literally trying to blow $30 million in the 1980s in 30 days. And everyone, he can't tell anyone what he's doing.
Right.
You know, it's just like the craziest spending ever. And it just kind of makes this point of how hard it is. A local news reporter takes interest in the character Montgomery Brewster. He starts following him around. And there's this quote that I remember the reporter gives of the movie, and it stuck with me about this. And he says something along the lines of, Montgomery Brewster on the road of excess, heading to the Palace of Wisdom, right? And he just, and that road of excess to Palace of Wisdom, that spectrum, I think that's kind of where all of the global rich, somewhere along that spectrum, they're all traveling and kind of looking.
And it's beautiful because where the money stops, you step in. You have to be interesting. You have to be great. You have to be talented. You have to make people laugh, cry, you know, fill with passion when you sing, or it's like, good.
And that's one of the shocking things, right? It's like, okay, I'm rich. I had someone call me the other day and they're like, how much for Met Gala tickets? Well, you know, there's no price on the tickets because Vogue wants to know, A, do you have a big enough brand to justify walking down the red carpet? And two, are you an interesting enough person to be in the room after? And that's not for sale. It's like $60,000? I'm like, bro, I don't know how to help you, right? Because the point's not how much money do you have. The point is, you know, if we approached the controller of the show and said, hey, we have this client who's super, super interesting, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly. Whether or not they would like to have this person right there.
Wow. I feel like what do you mean 60,000 bucks? I feel like it's a skit that I have yet to write. You know, like, what do you mean, pal?
I can't buy that. I've got off.
60,000
right, exactly. Exactly.
You know? And, well, I think there's a disbelief that happens perhaps when we talk about, you know, you exit, you have this huge moment in your life and you say, what do you mean things are still closed? I worked my whole life to have every door
open the doors.
And it's no different. And that is crushing in a sense.
Absolutely.
It feels like you just got tricked at the worst possible time.
That's a funny idea. That's funny.
Right?
Yeah. No, that's great.
I mean, you're sitting there saying, I just sold my company. I have done nothing but die for this thing. I finally get the check and I can't even get tickets to the Met Gala. Why did I do all this? Wow.
Yeah. You know, we work with people. We help them understand how the world works. And we put an emphasis on folks that are nice, people that we can make happy, people who are...
Sure, you don't want to take on a, you know, cranky...
There's a lot of people you can't make happy, right?
Right. No matter how many, no matter what you do,
they're unhappy people, right? And when you're in human providing services to an unhappy, really rich person, it's going to be painful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we focus on folks, like I said, who are on the kind, nice, socially responsible, right? People who do things for others, people who are social responsibility is not socialism. And right. So folks that act, you know, in a socially responsible way, these are the people that we can kind of get behind and do special things for.
Because you believe in them to be able to pitch them and to introduce them. Your business, it doesn't even seem like it could be real. Like it seems like
see all these wrinkles and gray hairs and bald spots. It's definitely real. That's where all these wrinkles came from.
You show up to YC. Did you show up with this idea to YC?
I did.
It's got to be unlike anything else that was in the program.
Right. I mean, it's a pretty different business. I mean, we're obviously still seed stage and working. Uh-huh. We haven't even gotten our A done. So, you know, we'll take bets as to whether or not this will actually be a big scalable thing. But you know, those market numbers that I gave you, 300,000 people worth spending $400 billion on lifestyle and recreation. You know, there's definitely dollars there. We've got a lot to prove out on the scalability side. But yeah, when we showed up, we don't look like the others.
Right. Right. Because this is almost, you have to be a little crazy to go after this idea.
Well, I've got that. Check.
Done.
A little crazy.
You have to be a little crazy, and you have to have so much contact in this world, which obviously you have. And there's such a few people that would even be able to.
Big barrier to entry.
To provide the
network. You know, in the beginning, it's a two-sided marketplace. So there's a cold start problem. You've got somebody trying to buy something that you're not selling, someone trying to sell something that no one's buying. Mm-hmm. We solve the cold start problem essentially with a concierge function. Right. You know, we'll do it once manually. Once it's done, we add it to our directory, make it searchable. It becomes inventory and then create other resellable inventory. But you got to be able to do and perform the real concierge work, level 3, 4, and 5, the impossible stuff that you can't get. And so that's a huge barrier to entry, right? Even if we, you know, super talented engineer with a bunch of money tried to enter our business, you got to have that global network in order to get it started.
Right. And that is just really challenging.
No shortcuts. Got to spend the years. Got to go build it the hard way.
So you're on one hand, you're in the business of building really good relationships, mm-hmm. really rare relationships.
Absolutely.
And on the other side, you're cataloging and making it, I guess, making that relationship, you can tap into it and search it and find it quickly when you need it, sort of having it, you know, on hand.
It's the whole, 6 degrees of separation.
Right.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You know, you've heard that idea that, hey, you are no more than 6 phone calls from Obama. You know, sure. We pride ourselves on making our clients no more than 2 phone calls to anyone in the world. We've got this great, you know, kind of hyper-connected network. Uh-huh. And going back to the phrase I butchered earlier, that the entire world is gated by people, no matter what you want to do, no matter what you want, there is a human being that can say yes or no.
Right.
Right on that. And if you know that person and they respect you and they know you to be trustworthy and and you've kind of managed the favor bank with that right. human being, there is almost nothing you can't accomplish treating people with respect and kindness and being a good friend and having a great network. And then if the profile of the client we're acting on behalf of is also awesome,
right?
Then it's actually great. Easy. Yeah. But being able to know who to call, and if you don't know, to know who will know.
Right.
That's really the art of our business.
Wow. So what I really should be asking you is, what are the X factors of building a great relationship with great, accomplished people? And
I would say that people are people. I think one of the mistakes folks make is, I think there's this composite idea of like what a rich person's supposed to be like. Mm-hmm. We noticed it in the home service business. So we got an agreement to operate one of the largest single family homes in the world.
Okay.
There's a family of 5 living in it with over 50 full-time staff working in the home.
Wow. It's like a hotel.
Hotel, right?
Yeah.
Single family residence with a full-time staff of 5. And there's a story that I tell. Something happens. All hell breaks loose. And I rush into the kitchen.
One of the dogs got in the mud again or something like that.
And the staff's running around the kitchen and they're like, Madame wants pancakes. What? Madame wants pancakes. And everyone's screaming and running.
You gotta get the
I'm
like, mix.
Get her some pancakes. And they're like, we're out of mix.
I mean,
we're out
too.
Of Madame's special mix.
And there's 50 people here.
Right. Like, just follow. So I'm like, just call her and tell her that. See what else she wants to eat, right? And they're like, no, we can't call Madame we can't do that.
One of the options.
Right?
Right.
And so I pick up the phone. I call her bedroom and I'm like, we're out of pancake mix. And she says, just tell them to make me some eggs. Right? After it's over, she goes, and tell them to stop calling me Madame. Why is everyone calling me Madame? Right. You know, she's like, I'm not even 40 years old. Why? Like literally this staff of 50 had made up this idea that they couldn't tell this person, we're out of pancake mix. We're all humans, right? Like, all right, pancake mix is out. What else would you like? Like just a normal human thing. And we must call her Madame because right. It sounds fancy. She's just like, just call me by my first name. Like, this is silly. And so that's the Madame wants pancake story. Anyway.
I love it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I think I would have been bummed because I don't know if I would have been so cool about it. I would have been like, guys, the one time I call down there, I don't know.
You know.
Maybe I'm not the right customer. I'm not the right fit. I wouldn't pass the pre-qualification. Yeah. Oh, man. There's something that I have noticed myself picking up on in the past couple of weeks is I like to take a walk. And sometimes I take a walk in the morning or a bike ride, take a walk in the afternoon to clear my head. I live on Miami Beach, so I get to walk on this beautiful beach walk. It's, you know, it's kind of the cobblestone or paving stones, and it's just incredible lush on both sides. And I just found myself just looking at all the variety of just beautiful plants. And I said, this is luxury. Hmm. This is the most luxury I've ever felt. This, so many different palms and cactus and, oh, it's just so much. And I was just like, this is luxury. Hmm. That was the most luxury I've ever felt. And I pocketed that thought. And I was just like, remember that. You know, remember that. Draw from that. Because maybe I get to this post-wealth moment one day and I already learned the lesson.
Well, you know, I think we can all be post-wealth even now. Well, I won't say all.
Not post-wealth, post-luxury.
Yeah, the post-luxury idea, yeah. Right? That we can, that we cannot make money our primary aim in and of itself, in and of its own end. And obviously, I want to be respectful. There's real poverty in the world. There's people who are,
sure,
you know, needing to eat and things of that sort. But the truth is, and this has been studied, that once you cross about $96,000 a year in income, there is no additional happiness for money.
Right.
So basically, once you can lead a kind of middle income American life, and that number may have changed now that inflation's gone through the roof, but,
yeah,
but once you cross it.
You didn't say 30 million.
You know, look, the truth is that rich people get sad, depressed, and commit suicide just like poor people. Mm-hmm. Right? Like if money in and of itself made you happier, then, well,
shouldn't that just be erratic?
Right, the rates of suicide amongst the rich would be lower than, and is not.
Right.
Right? Because at the end of the day, we're all human beings. And so it's just some important things to keep in mind. I think, you know, really thinking about what makes us happy and connecting with that earlier in our careers and making time for those things that we're neglecting. Because, you know, we have this idea, if you go to our website, it says true success is more than money. And we're actually releasing a competitor to the Forbes billionaire list called the Myria Success List. Hmm. And the idea here is if all we're doing is chasing that number, mm-hmm, then the guy worth 500 million is sad because he ain't worth a billion.
Right.
And the guy worth a billion is mad because he ain't worth five. And the guy worth five is feeling poor to the guy who's worth 10. Right. And worth a da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, do you even know how much a billion actually is? I've blogged about this. Most people, you know, in our daily lives, besides, you know, a dozen drinks or, you know, a few hundred of a thing, we don't even have an intuitive feel for numbers, like what that even means. Mm-hmm. Like you look at a stadium and there's like 20,000 people. What is, yeah. Like you can't grasp it.
Right.
And, you know, the big idea for like helping people to get a feel for how big a billion actually is time. You spend 1 million seconds of your life every 12 and a half days, about the time that it takes you to earn a biweekly paycheck. Mm-hmm. So every time you get paid, you've spent 1 million seconds of life.
Okay.
How long do you think it takes you to spend 1 billion seconds of life?
They said there would be no math on this test.
just intuitively, what does it feel like? You don't even have to do the math. Just what does it feel like?
30 years.
32.7 years.
32.7 years.
Yes. So the difference between a millionaire.
See that, ladies and gentlemen?
That's great.
Public math.
That's great.
That was not, there's no editing tricks here.
That's great.
That was real.
That's great. But the difference between a millionaire and a billionaire is the difference between a 2-week paycheck and all the time that you work. Normally,
right,
people retire in 30, 32 years.
Right.
Right? So your career versus a 2-week paycheck is the difference between it. So why then chase 5 billion, 10, 15, 20, da, 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 da.
It just,
why not chase happiness? It's meaningless at that point. Like you can't spend it. You can't do anything.
Right.
So enjoy your life. help other people, act in a socially responsible way, do things that matter to you and those you love, because, well, I'm worth $47 billion, but there's somebody worth 100. So blah, 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 blah. It's all silly at some point.
Well, and it's like, we all know this in theory, but you're transacting. There is a business of fixing this problem. Your business.
Yes. Well, I mean, look, we are, there's someone who described my company as, solving the maladies of the rich.
Well,
right. Like,
it's to me, it's like, I don't even know if we pull the word rich out. It's just, you know, even if you're working as a high school principal and you find yourself at the end of your career saying, I wanted to be an artist.
Yep.
It still is tragic.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if you were making $100,000 a year or $100 million.
Absolutely.
You know? So I think this, you could have the same conversation and just pull the word rich out of it. And yep. We all can take something away from it.
Back to your point, right? Of kind of getting beyond, what was the phrase we were using earlier? My old man brain is, I'll leave it out.
Well, you were saying post-luxury.
Post-luxury. That was
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Which is something that I don't think I'll be the same since hearing it in that way. It's like startling to think about. And it makes perfect sense. Logically.
Right. We chase it, we chase it, we chase it, we chase it. For what?
Because we believe that when we get it, the paradigm all of a sudden magically shifts. Mm-hmm. And now it's like you enter the gates of heaven on planet Earth, and it just doesn't sound like it really plays out quite like that.
Well, you know, I mean, let's be, if you really think about it, our founding fathers were brilliant in some ways, but idiots in others. You know, why do we do what we do today? Well, we do what we do today because people did what they did.
Sure.
We were born like, well, capitalism is the economic system. We should all, da da da. Well, we don't know why. We're just like born into it, and that's the way that it is. Well, you know, if you really, really think about it, when capitalism was invented, modern capitalism was invented, the brightest minds in the world, like the Einsteins of that era, believed that the sun revolved around the earth.
Mm. Yeah, they had that
geocentrism, right?
They had that part a little off.
Yeah. 1608, Galileo, the great astronomer, hears of this device called a Danish perspective glass, and he decides to build one. We know it as a telescope today. He measured. He writes a book, 1610, says, no, the earth revolves around the sun. This is a problem because the church said, no, the earth is the center of the universe.
Right.
That was 1610. The brightest minds in the world did not settle the debate until 1837. Mm. 200 years later to figure out that the earth was orbiting the sun.
It was tough.
And these were the people who invented our economic systems right. and all of these ideas that were, you know. So listen, we all have to like, you know, take a breath, take right. a beat. Like how do we act in a socially responsible and thoughtful sort of way, right? It can't just be money, 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 sure. money. Because that just, it's not going to end well.
Yeah.
Personally or societally.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I have personal anecdotes of seeing what you're saying, but you have so many anecdotes, whereas I have a basket. You have a storage locker.
Well, I'm in the business of these anecdotes. Right? You know what I mean? It'd be like you on the podcasting side, right? You've met so many people. Like I'm just in this business having these conversations every day.
Right, right. I think this conversation that we're having is more about humanity in a sense than it is about business. It always happens. It happens. It's striking because why not onboard, quote unquote, onboard yourself into Myria today at home from wherever you are, for no matter how much money you're making, you know, Maybe you're making $20 an hour. Maybe you're making $200 an hour.
I love that idea.
Onboard yourself. How? What are the questions that you ask yourself to better prepare yourself for the moment when you do get the payout? Maybe start today. What would you do? What are the questions that you would ask?
And I would even modify that question to be like, don't wait on the payout. Don't condition your happiness on some future thing.
Yep.
Be happy right now. And if you're not, and there's things happening in your life that are preventing you from it, figure out how to be happy. Figure out, you know, find the things where the meaning really is. Mm. And I think we can build a better society where we understand each other and we talk and everything's not so polarized and so crazy at all times when we think outside of ourselves. But, you know, obviously I got a lot of opinions I can go on. I have to check myself to not jump off into my...
Well, no, I mean, what's important is that you don't just, at your company, I mean, we're scaling your company out to like a grander message here, perhaps, than's on your website. But the idea is like, if you're uniquely onboarding each person, that suggests that every person has their own roadmap and it doesn't look like the guy next door's or the girl next door's. So when we look at social media, we look at mass media and movies and Hollywood, all this kind of shit, right? It's like, am I taking my meaning of life from this film? I know I did. Right. Am I taking my meaning of life from this influencer? Mm. Am I taking it from this celebrity? I've made this mistake and I'm still tempted to make this mistake. I mean, and at no point do you just say, well, what do I want to do? Because asking yourself what I want to do is one of the scariest fucking questions on planet Earth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're wired for social contagion, right? Humans have the longest sort of gestational kind of growth period of any mammal, mm-hmm. right? And that baby is just sitting there with those big eyes looking, and they're imitating. You know, mm-hmm. you teach them words, and we're literally hardwired to right. imitate one another and so
we're getting
forth and so on.
Basically a programming that starts when we're very young and just continues and continues.
Absolutely. So as an adult, when you see someone doing something, whatever thing is, if you're looking at it, if they're building an audience, people want to emulate it no matter what it is, right? And infinity is real. So people want to do different things. Mm. And so people are getting da-da-da-da-da-da. And all of that's cool as long as we can respect the differences.
Yeah. And say, hey, that was a good, that inspired me.
And then ground
now
yourself.
Let me go back to my workshop
and, then ground
and build my own plan.
Absolutely.
Or refine my own plan.
Yep.
You know, it's great to see that you acted that out for me. I now know what that might feel like.
Yep.
Thank you. I'm going to go scratch that one off my list because I don't
Not
need
really.
To do it anymore.
And go be you.
Yeah. And when you, I'm doing this right now. I mean, I am like, this is the season of me doing this because I've found that so much of my life, I never even gave myself an opportunity to ask that question.
Absolutely. That comes up all the time, you know, in our, what I was describing as blueprints, right? We meet with the person. They've had great success. They're thinking about what's next. And the conversation will go something like this. Hey, I just spent the last 20 years of my life building my business. And we'll get to the section where we talk about fun. It's like, have more fun. And they'll say something along the lines of, I don't even know how. I don't even know what I like. I don't even know what I enjoy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know what my hobbies are. Right? And so we'll suggest a series of essentially like, you know, just go try some things out. And we have all these learnings and things that folks can kind of experiment with and pick up hobbies, et cetera. But the idea that here I've made $1 billion in 20 years and I don't even know where to begin to enjoy it because I haven't done anything but work for the last two decades. It's a fascinating thing.
It's so crazy to look at it like a science experiment from a distance and just be like, wow, that's crazy. That billionaire doesn't know what he likes. And then we like look in the mirror and we're like,
Neither do I. Yeah.
Neither do I. Yeah. Depending on where you grew up, you were handed a paradigm for what it's like to have fun. For me in New York, it's going out, getting drunk, spending a lot of money, and ending up in someone's apartment at 5 in the morning. Like that was the paradigm.
That's the business model. Yeah.
That's the business model. That's the calling card for New York City. And I did that for so many years. And it just like... As I pulled myself out of that, I just said, I don't think I actually like this. I think there has to be more somewhere out there.
Absolutely.
You know?
You know, I went through a, you know, really, really significant and wild year. The worst things that I ever could imagine happening to me all happened at the same time. And, you know, it turned out that these things that happened to me didn't really happen to me. They happened for me because it had the best personal effect ever. I lost 100 pounds in 4.5 months. I went through this really, really interesting personal transformation. You know, waking up and rediscovering ourselves and reconnecting with ourselves, you know, all of us who've been like chasing building a business, you know, that stuff is hard. It's even, you said earlier, a little crazy. And, you know, I think it's important for people to take that time and really, really deeply figure it out. And I know it was transformational for me.
I might even venture to say that that time to yourself is a luxury. Taking that time to say, hey, today I'm going to just figure out what I like. I'm going to build a list. I'm going to go play a sport that I've never played before. I'm going to go swim in the ocean, and it's because I live on the front of the, you know, I live on the ocean front. I've never been in the damn ocean.
Right.
Right. And just see what's out there. I mean, and you can start that today.
Absolutely.
I joined my desk on Wall Street in 2008, the exact worst time ever. It was just like, and everything goes to shit. And I found myself like with a man without a country. The guy that ran the business, they demoted him. They brought in another guy. I worked for Barclays and we bought Lehman. Lehman were some badass, you know, mofos that showed up on the trading floor. And I found myself working for someone who I didn't know or particularly like for a period of time. And I'm sure he's a great guy. I just didn't really know him that much. And I came into work one morning. I'm just like bleary-eyed, exhausted. It's 5 a.m. and this dude's already on the desk and he lives in Jersey. And I'm just like, you know, and I made some kind of wisecrack as I was known to do and still am known to do. And the guy next to me said, hey, you better watch it. He's a young guy. He said, you better watch it. That's what you're going to want to be one day. He runs the whole business. And I just said, I don't want to be that guy one day. I want to be
as the last thing I want to do, right?
Trading exactly. Floor as possible.
Right.
And then he looked at me and said, well, why are you still here?
And you're like, why am I still here? That's a great question. Yeah. What a great question.
So in that moment, instead of just quietly getting out of my chair and walking out the front door, I stayed for another 6 years, 7 years, just to make sure. Just to make sure. But there's these moments in our life that were, I think there's these ahas that we don't even grab.
In the time, you can't hear it.
In the time,
right?
You can't hear it.
It's like diet and exercise, right? You hear it all the time, but it doesn't really register what it means.
So if you're listening to this episode and you've had those moments, everyone's had these moments. Just look back and just say, remember when I was at work and then the person came in and I wanted to leave? Well, it's scary when you leave and it can suck. It certainly did for me most of the time. And then it got a lot better.
Absolutely.
And now I wouldn't change it for the world. Absolutely. Because I wouldn't have the opportunity to be sitting down with you and talking about some mind-blowing stuff if I was still on that trading floor. And you know what? There's guys that want to be on that trading floor and they deserve the seat, not me.
When I met my girlfriend, she is brilliant, studying architecture and urban planning. And we were in some hotel somewhere in the city, and there's this office building, and you could look straight into this office building, right? And she goes, that's my dream. And I look, and I just see like a row of cubicles, and I'm like, where's your dream? She's like, right there, because there were these beautiful white cubicles in this nice downtown
organized,
San Francisco office.
High-end corporate.
That's my dream. And I looked her in the face and I said, darling, you need to dream bigger dreams. You got too much talent to be sitting in that cubicle. And, you know, and I think she would tell you that's some of the best advice she's ever been given.
Wow.
She's off doing all sorts of other amazing
wow,
stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
You provided some hardcore perspective in that moment.
Not that there's anything wrong with being in a cubicle. I come from nothing. I respect hard work.
That's what I want.
Service people.
Get to.
Yeah, not trying to knock that.
My model's different from your model.
For her in that position, all that talent. I mean, this is like, this girl's got to be a great in her profession. Uh-huh. Shooting for working in a cubicle, it's just like
didn't feel right.
Yeah, like you've got too much talent. You know, this young lady sold a chair to Herman Miller when she was 18 years old, right? Like she's got like world class talent. It's just like you gotta
be a good sponsor for the pod.
Gotta aim a little high, right? aim a little higher.
That's awesome. Well, this is one of those conversations that I thought was going to go one way, and it went a completely different direction. And there's so much that I'm personally pulling from this and clarifying about this topic, because I like to think that I'm this unlikely person that shed a little bit of light on this idea of the cranky, loudmouth, status chasing, competitive lunatic,
right,
and this calm, collaborative, easygoing guy on the other end. And I made up two random names for him. I called him Rich and Really Rich. Really has nothing to do with money. It's just two different outlooks.
Right.
But what's, I guess, just some poetic justice for me is like, take this into the field and it sounds like it pans out.
It definitely pans out.
That's a W for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And listen, if it's helpful, we can talk through some of the, you know, some of just the fun, crazy rich versus really rich things. I could probably laundry list some of those things of just funny, you know,
give
just
me
funny
some anecdote. Give me some crazy stuff.
That folks have done or requested.
Yes.
I mean.
Because look, we're in the business of education and entertaining. So let's.
Absolutely.
You don't even know where to start. I see what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, some really, really crazy stuff. So I had a client, and I also have to be very careful when I'm going through these lists.
We can't put the triangle so here.
I had a client who wanted armed private security while they were on vacation.
Okay.
The problem is the European country that they were traveling to forbids armed private security. You can only carry a gun in that country if you are an on-duty police officer or an on-duty, you know, kind of federal police or what have you.
Right.
We got our client diplomatic protection, and the president of that country actually gave up a member of his own security detail to secure our client, which is a funny, like, wild request for a number of different reasons. I have a colleague. This one didn't come to me, but my colleague... client requested his own kidnapping.
Okay, so this is like a real life The Game.
It was for a
Are you familiar with the movie The Game?
Okay, yeah.
In your industry, that's got to be one of the
top. For this crazy bachelor party night, he wanted to freak his friends out. I mean, and they did it. They like
truly
they renditioned him, right, with like special operators, like they like as technical as you could get, because he was in, he signed off on it. His guests didn't know, but they like full on black bagged him, you know,
pulled him out of there.
Yeah, right. And it was all like an elaborate gag and prank. I mean, I can go on and on.
This is the actual plot from the movie The Game.
That's funny.
It was like yeah, not that we just need to talk about the movie The Game, but the movie The Game is about a very successful, unhappy person who can't seem to find his spark.
Right.
And so his down and out brother arranges a really dangerous but exciting life mission, this kidnapping and violence and murder and all this crazy shit.
Yep.
That's so elaborate that it's feels real.
You know, and on the flip side of it, while that stuff's fun to talk about, you know, most of our clients are family people. Most of our clients are parents, kids, spouse. They are not trying to get divorced. You know, they're trying to do the right
thing. And they're not trying to get kidnapped at their birthday party for the most part.
Right. So the vast super majority of them, and they're just, there's also interesting things there, right? We have a lot of demand for these, let's call them summer camps.
Okay.
Where being that successful can be isolating, right? There's this idea that people want something from you and they won't tell you the truth and da 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 da. So you build the big house, you build the big hedge, you wall yourself off. Great success can be insular.
It's just you,
right?
A loser alone.
Right. Well, we're humans. You know, the greatest form of torture that anyone can have is solitary confinement, sure. Right? Like,
leaving me by myself for years. That's like the, wow, the worst thing you can do to someone. So, you know, being super, super rich is isolating. And so people who are in that position, like, they want to meet people, like, in an interesting and social way. But then there's the problem, like, oh, does this person want something? Are they interesting? Am I interesting? Right? All of this, there's all this, like, nuance to it. And so organizing summer camps where families with kids can go meet and hang with other families with kids, and the kids have their own activities. So if the parents want to go get drunk or party or whatever they want to do, you know, they can, they, everyone can have like adult fun, kid fun, and meet new and interesting people. Like, this is a, it sounds so unsexy, but for people in that box, it's like, sign me up. Like,
so you are telling me that there are secret summer camps for rich people.
I mean, we create them. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that there are, but yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And it's, and here's the funny thing. It's not just rich people. So my big idea behind all of this is we want to power a service revolution. So the idea that rich people should be having more fun and spending more money is actually for the greater good. It sounds like it's not. But if you listen closely, if you know how money moves, how money is taxed, then you'd understand that when you're just running up the Forbes list, $10 billion, $20 billion, $30 billion, those dollars aren't being taxed. They're not employing people. They're not doing things. When you're deploying it, when you're enjoying your life, when you're giving back, when you're doing those things. And look, the robots are coming, AI and all of this stuff. But human beings are still going to have to serve one another from a service perspective. There's, we got to do things for each other.
Right.
And most service jobs, you know, I come from a, you know, poor family in Memphis, Tennessee, North Memphis. You know, my grandmother turned bedpans for a living. Someone's going to have to take care of the sick. Mm-hmm. AI ain't going to do that, mm-hmm, right? And so—
You don't want a robot hand holding your hand.
Exactly. So services have been pushed down to this little thing we just shun, we just forget about. What if there was a luxury service industry where a person, everyone's not going to get a STEM degree. Everyone's not going to be a computer scientist. Everyone's not going to be a doctor. Everyone's not going to be an entrepreneur. Person, they've got a trade, they've got a service, they've got a skill.
Right.
They want to make a great living, take care of their family, lead a good life, do their thing. What's wrong with that? Right. The fact that we don't have kind of a way for those people to also win, to be the best of their professions. Right. And we're our the sales side of our platform puts those people in business and enables them to meet these super wealthy clients who want to do interesting things and build better lives.
Well, it's like, you know, in New York, it's the finest restaurants in New York. We're in LA, the finest restaurants in LA, right? That is a really serious business, and anyone on the front lines is pulling in some serious cash because they're the best of the best.
Yep.
Yeah, it's we just have a big country. We have a big country, so we have these centers of wealth, and we think about the service industry. We could think about it in those centers of wealth and these top tier restaurants where there's lots of money, and then there's some holes in the map. A little bit.
Absolutely.
But perhaps, I don't know. That's, I haven't thought about this one before. This is a little complicated. I don't know what happens in the future, because what you said is we all need to serve each other. Yeah. And there can be misallocations of how that
works. You know, I think what I'm trying to say is that the service industry is not going anywhere. People are still going to have to take care of people. And the more communally minded we are, the less us versus them that we are. You know, you hear the old adage that, you know, never trust anyone who's rude to the waiter.
Sure.
He's a jerk to the waiter, because anyone who will be rude to someone that they think is beneath them, they'll take advantage of you too if they could, right? And they're probably just being insincere to your face. You know, the idea that helping service people build bigger businesses, meet better clients, and essentially creating a layer of the ability for, I've got a skill, a trade, or a service, and I can actually reach that six-figure business.
Sure.
Be a luxury service provider and find a market. You know, remember I said wealth is insulating.
Right.
So the globally rich are kind of isolated from folks. They don't want to be. Right. But they don't, it's hard to do. It's uncomfortable. And I think Myria by design breaks a lot of those barriers and puts people in fun and interesting situations with one another to just meet each other.
And the more that we meet each other, the more that we talk, the more that we discover we're like each other. Mm. The differences kind of fall to the side. Mm-hmm.
So you can sit and toil and think that one day, you know, it's all going to be different. And then the rap video starts and, you know, everyone shows up and the champagne starts flowing. Or you can start to look for those moments that you can enjoy right now.
Absolutely.
I'm going to take a little venture here. Some of those things and ideas might be completely free.
There's an old adage. The best things in life are free.
Yeah.
The next best things in life are very expensive. That's Coco Chanel, but yeah, that's the saying.
Listen, Ray, this was nothing. This conversation, totally fascinating, oddball, went a different direction. I feel like I just learned a little bit more about my own craft.
As did I. Thank you.
And it's great to come full circle on this discussion. And we are indeed all in it together, man. So thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you for having me, man. It was much appreciated. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
All right.